So tonight, I wanted to focus on something that many of us do at this time of the year, and that is learn Pirkei Avos. Between Pesach and Shavuos, a lot of people have the practice of studying Pirkei Avos, and I thought it would be worthwhile to kind of reflect a little bit about why we should do that, what the great significance of Pirkei Avos can be for us, and why I think it's a great thing to embrace. So for those who are familiar, so Pirkei Avos is a tractate of Mishnayos that appears in Seder Nezikin. Now, Pirkei Avos, the tractate Avos, is 5 chapters. However, it's been already over 1,000 years that people have been studying Pirkei Avos between Pesach and Shavuos. So the rabbis, at some point probably in the period of the Gaonim or the Rishonim, they figured, like, wait a second, we have 6 weeks between Pesach and Shavuos, and we only have 5 chapters. So the last week, everybody's going to be bored, or they're going to be confused, so let's tack on one more. So when you open a traditional Pirkei Avos, you will find 6 chapters. The last chapter is actually not a Mishnah. It's not a Mishnayos. It's a brisa, we could call it. It's a text from the period of the Mishnah, but it's not actually part of the Mishnah. So when you look in the Mishnah, it's 5 chapters, but there are 6 weeks, so they put a 6th one on. So to do that, I wanted to focus on 2 Rambams, which give us 3 approaches. 3 different approaches as to why and how Pirkei Avos can be meaningful to us. The Rambam wrote this Pirush, this commentary, which you have 2 sides. There's A and B. The first side is the Rambam's introduction to the Mishnah in general, and the second side, which is B, is the Rambam's introduction to Pirkei Avos itself. I have more. So, the Rambam wrote this when he was a teenager. Not everybody writes a commentary on all of Mishnah when they're a teenager, but the Rambam was, let's just call him, an overachiever. The Rambam, for those just who need a refresh, the Rambam lived, anybody remember? Yes. Just less than a half hour. He lived from 11:35 till 12:04. That's the key.
I knew it was something with a half.
That's right. Just less than a half hour. 11:35 till 12:04. He was born in Cordova. Then they had to move because of these fanatic Muslim extremists. Some things just don't change. So he moved. First he ended up in Fez for a couple of years, and then from Fez he went to Israel, then from Israel, very short time, he ended up in Egypt. He was supported primarily, initially, from his brother. His brother was a very successful businessman, and then his brother drowned in a sea accident, and essentially the Rambam had to go to work for a living, so he began his very successful career as a physician for the caliph in Egypt. But before the Rambam did all of this, and before the Rambam wrote his major work, the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam wrote the Pirush HaMishnayos. That work was originally written in Judeo-Arabic. It was not written in Hebrew. So what you're looking at is a traditional translation by Rav Kapach, Zichron Levracha, to the Rambam. So to begin, and I spoke about this a little bit, for some of you this is a repetition from before Pesach, but we only mentioned it very briefly in passing, is an article that appeared first in the New York Times and then in an online publication called the Huffington Post. Some people read that for news or analysis. So I'm going to share with you this article from the Huffington Post, and there is a reference here to an article that previously was published in the New York Times. The original New York Times article that was published is called This Life, The Stories That Bind Us. And it was written by a guy by the name of Bruce Feiler, who was a commentator for the New York Times. And he writes about the impact of family history on children. And there was there were two research. One is the name of Marshall Duke, another one is Robin Fivish, and they did a longitudinal study where they looked at kids and they took a survey of those kids of how much they knew about their family history. And they gave them all kinds of questions. And then they tracked these kids over the course of their lifetime, and what they found was something astonishing. And that is that the kids who had a better understanding of their family history, on all levels of success, whether it's avoidance of substance abuse, friendship, self-confidence, relationships, business acumen, all of the figures showed that the kids who had a higher level of their own family history did much better later on in life in all different aspects. That was the research. So this article appeared in the New York Times, and the lead researcher, Marshall Duke, who's the Candler Professor of Psychology at Emory University, which is in Atlanta, he says he was inundated with requests to find out what were the questions that they asked these kids to figure out, you know, how much they knew about their family history. Now, just to point, in case nobody should get nervous, they point out in the article that just because, let's say, your kids can or can't answer these questions, doesn't mean they're going to be messed up later in life. That's not what we're saying. But what we are saying is that there is a high correlation between the ability to understand your family and the knowledge of your family history and the future success in your life. So when I saw this, a cousin of mine who's an awesome educator in Cleveland before Pesach sent it to me, so we actually did this at our Seder for the first time. So I had a little thing going on with my kids that during the Seder, I just asked them questions about our family, because the Seder is about the story of the Mesorah, but it's not just about the Mesorah of Kol Yisrael, it's also the Mesorah of your own family. So they were inundated with requests, because in the New York Times article, they didn't tell you what the questions were. So he says, they published it in the Huffington Post in this article, which you can get online, it's not a secret. And he tells you what they call the DYK. DYK is, do you know? That's how they refer to it, the DYK scale. So here we go. Here, I'll just give you a couple. They have 20 questions, and then you give up you tally it up, and then you have your score. Do you know how your parents met? Do you know where your mother grew up? Do you know where your father grew up? Do you know where some of your grandparents met? Do you know where your parents were married? Do you know which person in your family you look like most? Do you know some of the illnesses and injuries that your parents experienced when they were younger? Skipping. Do you know the national background of your family, such as English, German, Russian, etc.? Do you know some of the awards that your parents received when they were in school, etc.? Do you know about a relative whose face froze in a grumpy position because he or she did not smile enough? And they have a note, the postscript of the article is about the last question. 15% of our sample actually answered yes. This is because the stories that families tell are not always, quote unquote, true. Sometimes they're told to tell a lesson. So some of us know about stories that came down in our family, which were not necessarily, they're not accurate stories, but they're told for a reason. So I think... I would say this research is the first reason to learn Pirkei Avos. And I think that's one level, one way to understand what the Rambam writes on side A, where I put the little arrow. This is the Rambam who's trying to explain to us, this is the Rambam in the beginning of all of Mishnayos. He's trying to explain to us why it is that they put Avos where they did. Because if you take a look, wait a second. Pirkei Avos is a little bit unusual. It's the ethics of the fathers. It's moral and ethical principles. So it's not an easy call where you would put that in the Mishnayos. Right? Think about it. There are six orders of the Mishnah. There's, what do we have? Zrayim is the first. That's mostly agricultural mitzvahs. Moed, festivals, time-bound mitzvahs. Nashim, some matrimonial law. Nezikin, damages. Kodshim, laws of the Beis HaMikdash, and then Taros, the laws of purity and impurity. So trying to figure out where you're going to put that, it's a toss-up. So the Rambam says, I'll tell you why they put it in the laws of damages. He says, I'll tell you why. Page A, side A, number one. V'kasher hishlim kol ma shehadayonim tzrichim lo. After the Mishnah has told us all the things that the judges need to know, hischil avos. They taught us Pirkei Avos. Why? Va'asakein l'shtei sibos, for two reasons. Ha'achas, the first one, kedei lahudia amitus ha-mesora, that it can teach us the truth of the mesora, ha-mesoras v'ha-kabbala, shehi emes, that it is true, chabura mipnei chabura, from one group of sages to the next, etc. We'll get back to the next line in a second. So the Rambam says, you know how it starts in Pirkei Avos? Moshe kibol Torah miSinai, he gave it to Yoshua, Yoshua gave it to the Zekanim, the Zekanim gave it to the Nevi'im, and then, in the Mishnayos, then they give you, these two received it from those two, these rabbis got it from those rabbis, you trace it all the way down. So on the first level, I think what the Rambam is telling us, is that you have to know your family story. the story of the Jewish people and the story of our tradition. So therefore, you got to learn Pirkei Avos. That's the DYK research. You have to know where we came from collectively. That's on one level. And then on a second level, what the Rambam is really alluding to in a more focused way is that you have to know how the halacha develops. You have to appreciate the development of the halacha. So this is a very important concept that has a lot of different ramifications. So for example, one question will come up in occasion. You know, they call the rabbi with a question, and the rabbi has to make a shikol hadas. He has to essentially triage, because oftentimes you have two competing halachic values. Well, how do you know which one takes precedence? Well, if you don't understand the development of halacha and where things come from and how they were introduced, it's very difficult to make a value judgment. Not that you're making value judgments on the halacha on your own, but you're looking at it from the development, and you have to know how the development of the Torah came about to understand what the origin of various halachos are, what's biblical, what's rabbinic, what's minhag. So I will pick on some of the grandparents in the room here for a moment. I have this little piece of paper which I shared which I shared with the Nussbaums one year, because they came for grandparents. They, very young grandparents, I'll just say. Very young grandparents.
We're all young grandparents.
Very young. So I shared with them this piece of paper. It comes from a website called simpletoremember.com. Which I don't have to repeat it, because now you got it, simpletoremember.com. So I can't vouch for exactly every step of this, because I'm not knowledgeable enough about the period of the Gaonim, and there's a lot of confusion about who is whose Rebbe and who is whose Talmud in the period of the Gaonim. But you can follow this trail and go all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu down to the table right here today. So somebody, I forget exactly how, Rabbi Appel was the musmach of who? Rav Moshe Soloveitchik in the 30s.
Yes.
Right? He died in 1941, so he must have received. 30s. In the 30s. So he got smicha in the 30s. So all you have to do is plug in Rabbi Appel, and then you connect yourself to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was a student of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, which will take you all the way back to Volozhin, which was essentially the great yeshiva in Eastern Europe. 90% of yeshivas today come from Volozhin Yeshiva, nearest one Polish exception, but Lakewood and Neri Yisrael in Baltimore, and Tells, both Tells, of course, Merkez Harav and Yerushalayim and YU and Chaim Berlin, almost all these yeshivas all come from Volozhin, so you can trace yourself back to Volozhin, and so that means most yeshiva people today, most Rabbanim, they can find themselves, and then they take you back, and this is just the Ashkenazi train, you can have your own for Sephardic, all the way back to the period of the Rishonim. And then they have, this is the middle part, which is the Gaonim. And the Rambam gives you from Moshe Rabbeinu till the end of the Gemara. So from the end of the Gemara, it's only another 1,000 years, less than 1,000 years. Right? The Gemara was concluded in about the 5th century, 6th century, about the year 500. So Rashi, Rabbeinu Gershom, it's about the year 1,000. So it's not that, it's not so far. And it's an amazing thing that you can literally, you can take a map and connect yourself. You know, I myself, I'm a student of, you know, I mentioned Rav Schwartz, should live and be well, Shev Refuah Shalema, and Rabbi Ben Chaim L'Chaim, let's say Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichron Levracha, and Lahavdil Rav Herschel Shechta. These are Rabbanim who are Talmidim Rav Soloveitchik, and they, you know, it goes all the way back. So you need to learn Pirkei Avos, because when you put it in that context, it's like, wow, you know, it's so much more meaningful and impactful when you realize that you're part of something that is an honest-to-goodness, unbroken chain. It's not like somebody made it up last week. You know, these halachas come back and they develop in a context with a history. So the Rambam says, you have to know, you have to respect the system, because you have to know that it comes from somewhere. And it's not just of interest to historians, it should be important to everybody. Kids, when they learn, they should realize that they come from a chain of Masorah that goes all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Rambam says, you know why you put Pirkei Avos here? Because you have to know, when the rabbis in your community are teaching you something, they're not just teaching it to you in a vacuum. They received it from their teachers, who got it from their teachers, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that takes us to the next line of the Rambam, where the Rambam on line 4 says, "Ulefichach tzarech lachabid es ha'ish ha'chacham ulahachshiva b'mayla ramah b'neishu nosei ha'kabbalah." Therefore, we have to have respect, appreciation, and deference to the Chachmei HaMasorah. The three people I just mentioned a minute ago, Those are real standard bearers of the Masorah. And we have to recognize the significance of the fact that we have people still in our generation who literally are the Balei Masorah, who received it from people who came from a different time and a different place. Literally, they literally received that tradition. Rav Schwartz, you know me well, usually at the beginning of the year for the Kollel, so we go to the CRC, we bring everybody, we have a get-together with Rav Schwartz, and he usually will reminisce about his time in yeshiva. So he received smicha in 1949. We're a long time from 1949 now. From 1949, from Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Shatskis and Dr. Belkin. An oral exam, sitting with the three of them in a room. And that's what he's telling us, the young students today, so that we'll tell our children and our students one day, you know, I sat in a room with a man who himself received the tradition from Rav Soloveitchik. That's the Masorah. So you have to recognize the significance of that, and therefore you have to respect their tradition and their decision. So the Rambam says the reason why it's here in the context of Nezikin is that when the rabbis make a decision, we have to respect it. You know, those of us who are younger, we, you know, those of us who are self-aware, even though now I look much older than I am, but we recognize that the Rabbanim who are senior, who have that Masorah, they have so much to offer, and that we need to appreciate that. So this is reason number one why we should learn Pirkei Avos, because it has the component of Masorah, which has the family component, has the halacha component, and then it also has the significance of the Chachmei HaMasorah. That's reason number one. Reason number two, go to line 15. V'asibah hashenis. The second reason why we should learn Pirkei Avos, and the reason why it's specifically in this tractate, is kedei lahashmienu, to teach us b'masechta zu, in this tractate, musar, the ethical guidance, kol chacham min hachachamim, each of the sages from the sages, aleihem hashalom, kedei, top of the next column, shenilmod mehem mivchar hamidos, that we should learn from them the proper behavior patterns, the proper ethical attributes. And the Rambam says, "V'hadayanim," and the judges, "Zukukim lahem yosur mikol adam." The judges, the leaders, are even more sensitive, and they should be more sensitive to a refined ethical and moral compass. So that's why it's here, because don't think that the judges can be just in anybody. If you're a leader, if you're a judge, you have to hold yourself to a higher standard. So this idea of understanding the Musar of the Chachamim, I think, is really significant. We like to think, and we're not wrong in thinking this, the Ramban thinks this, but we like to think that the Torah can be broken down into two sections, two segments, two tablets. How would you break it down? Right? That's the way I always learned, between man and God, and between man and man. So, the right side of the Luchos are between man and God, the left side of the Luchos are between man and man. Rav Schechter Shlita once made an observation about this. He pointed out, I think it was in the name of the Ma'abid, which side has more letters? The right side has a lot more letters. So the Gemara has a tradition that the Luchos were completely through and through, meaning they were hollow. So they were going to be of equal weight, which means that the right side letters were smaller and the left side letters were much bigger. So Rav Schechter pointed out that the between man and man letters are much bigger than the between man and God letters. So just if you're looking at it, there's a message there that it's not enough to worry just about, you know, Shabbos and things like that. Also, equally, and sometimes it's easier to focus on one and then the other, but there's actually a more difficult and third aspect of Judaism. And this comes from the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon lived in the 18th century. He was a genius, Rav Eliyahu Mivilna, and he has a commentary on some of the books in Nach, and in his commentary in the book of Yeshaya, he has actually a different way of breaking down the mitzvahs that Hashem has given us. He breaks it down between Bein Adam Lamakom, Bein Adam LaChavero, and then he has a third category. It's called Bein Adam LaAtzmo, between a person and themselves. That means personal character development. Because those are not always the same. You can have somebody who's exceedingly, I guess you'd say, religiously pious, bein adam lamakom, but, you know, he slashes people's tires when he gets angry at them. So that's a problem. That's a problem. You can have somebody who's extremely punctilious about how they treat other people, but they have real serious anger management problems. So that's no good either. And you can have somebody who's a very nice person, but they're not observant of the expectations that Hashem has from us, between us and him. So that's also no good. The Gra says that they have to be treated, each one of them, and not ignored. This is, I saw that this, I don't know if anybody's ever seen this. This is a commentary in Pirkei Avos, authored by Rav Aryeh Levin. If you're looking for a very easy read, that's like one of the best books that's ever written in the history of ever, it's called A Tzaddik in Our Time. It is a very simple book with little stories about a man who was an unbelievable, unusual tzaddik, who is so inspiring, amazing. And he, I would say, excelled, Aryeh Levin excelled in all areas. Bein Adam LaMakom, Bein Adam LaChavero, and Bein Adam LaAtzmo. Each one, he was a superstar. So he wrote this book, actually, it was a manuscript that he wrote during the famine in Yerushalayim during the First World War. And then, I think it was after he passed away, or at the end of his life, it was published, his commentary on Pirkei Avos. And it was this was after his life, they published under this title, Reb Aryeh Haya Omer, which is kind of like a play on some of the phrases that you'll have in Pirkei Avos. And it's beautiful. It's a very simple, down-to-earth, it was published not too long ago. So he has, the publisher has an introduction, quoting Gemara in Bava Kamma, which is amazing in terms of fitting with this comment from the Vilna Gaon. Because the Gemara Baba Kama has an expression, says, Hai ma deboi lemevi chasida, something like that. You want to be a chasid. Chasid means exceedingly pious. You want to be like platinum Jew. How are you going to be platinum Jew? So first the Gemara says, Lekayim, you should fulfill mili dinezikin. That which it says in the Zikin, meaning be careful when you ride your bike not to ride over somebody else's cat, and, you know, don't punch anybody else in the nose, things like that. Then the Gemara says, Rava Amar, Rava says, Mile de Avos. That's what it says in Pirkei Avos. And the last opinion, V'amrila Mile de Brachos. So he points out here that the Maharsha, Rav Shmuel Edels, so he says in his commentary in the back, because he says these are the three different categories of Torah represented in these three areas. You got to focus on, let's start with brachos. Brachos is between you and God. Nobody really cares. Your neighbor doesn't care if you say brachos. It doesn't really so much relate to your character development, although it's an expression of your character development. If you don't have gratitude, you won't say brachos. But it's really between you and God. Nezikin is interpersonal, and Pirkei Avos is the personal and ethical development. Now, there are some aspects of Torah where you'll find that all three come together. A good one is Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is a great one. Lashon Hara actually has all three components. A person who is careful about their speech, so they cultivate a sensitive personality. They cultivate a personality that worries about other people's feelings. So it's Bein Adam La'atzmo. There's the Bein Adam La'makom component, because there's like a million different Isurim involved in saying Lashon Hara. And of course there's the Bein Adam La'chavero component of not hurting other people through speech. So these three different aspects are important components of Torah, and that's why Pirkei Avos is so important. Because Pirkei Avos gets to the Mile de Avos, that's the personal refinement. It's not necessarily how you act to other people, but what kind of a person you are. Are you a friendly person or not? Well, there's nowhere, you know, you can look in the Shulchan Aruch. There's nowhere in Shulchan Aruch where it says, be friendly. It doesn't. That's not like a regulated behavior. It just isn't. It doesn't say you should be optimistic. It doesn't say you should be, you know, considerate. It says, don't punch somebody else in the nose, or even better, it actually, this is a strange observation, but it's true. There's actually nowhere in the Chumash where it says, don't punch somebody else in the nose. It says, if you punch them, you pay them. The rabbis try to figure out exactly where it says that you're not allowed to do that. You're not. Don't get excited. But the idea of, you can open up the Shulchan Aruch, and in theory, you could still be a jerk, is a problem. And that's why you have Pirkei Avos. You know, a great catch-all for this, I would say, is, you know, the Ramban's comment on Kedoshim Tiyu. right? Last week, 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, last week, we just read Parshas Kedoshim. So Ramban says, what do you need to read? What do you need to say Kedoshim to you? What does that mean? So Rashi says, Purushim, you should be separate. Ramban doesn't like that. So he says, I'll tell you what it means. It means don't be a jerk. Don't be vulgar. Because the Ramban says, look, you can look in all of Chumash from A to Z, and it doesn't say anywhere that you can't be a glutton, and you can't be vulgar. So Ramban says, that's why it says Kedoshim to you. Be a mensch. Be an upstanding person. And there's a parallel to that in Sefer Vayikra, V'asisa hayasher v'hatov. What does it mean, V'asisa hayasher v'hatov? What does that mean? It means do the right thing. So the Gemara gives you an example of this. You know, the Gemara in Bava Basra says, whenever I hear do the right thing, I can't tell. There was a guy, Marco, who used to serve the French fries in the YU Caf. And he was always encouraging us, do the right thing, take the vegetables. Never listened to him. Anyway.
What were the fries made of?
No, there was no trans fat, no carbs.
No,
they were all...
they're made from potatoes.
Yeah, yeah, French fries.
Okay, so there you go, vegetables.
Right, oh yeah, I didn't even think of that.
The non-fried
vegetables. Oh, right. Got it. Sorry, my bad.
So the Gemara says in Bava Basra, you have a guy who's selling their field, or in that case, it also has to do with the Yerusha. Unfortunately, this comes up sometimes. A person dies, they're living in Yerusha. This exists in both sides, in the sale case and also in the Yerusha case. The old man dies, he leaves two sons. So the old man, he lives in Cincinnati, and he has two sons. One who lives in Cincinnati, right next door to him, next to his property, and then he has another son who lives in Vancouver. So he's going to divide up the Yerusha. They have two plots of land right next to each other. So they say to each other, so the kid who lives in Cincinnati says, you know what, I really appreciate if when we split up the Yerusha, I'll take the side that's contiguous to my property. So I'll build an addition on my house, or I'll have a nice vegetable garden, I'll have it attached. And the other guy says, no, I don't want to split it like that, the one from Vancouver. Not that we ever know any stories like this, but he says, no, I want to insist that I get the plot on that side. Just like, so the Gemara says, that's what we call kofenoso al midas sodom. That's midas sodom. That's a horrible thing. Because, what do you care? You don't even live there. You live in Vancouver. You don't live in Cincinnati. What is your problem? So that's the idea of asisa v'yashav hatov. Just be a decent person. So that catch-all, the kind of person that you are, that's what's learned from Pirkei Avos. And that is perhaps all encapsulated in one phrase, in a teaching from the end of Maseches Makos. This is, I'll now let out a secret. Because most people, you come to shul, you hear the shir, you finish, and then they do this thing. No one knows what is happening. Usually they finish the shir, wherever you are, or like Mishnayos between Mincha Marv or something like that, and then someone say, and then it's like mumbling, and then somebody else will say, Kaddish. And then at that point, all the women run, and the guy says, Kaddish. What exactly, anybody ever know? You notice that you've seen that happen. Right, we've all seen that happen, and most people, we don't know what they're doing or what they're saying. What they're saying is that they want to say a rabbi's kaddish, which goes on learning. But sometimes they're just saying Tehillim or something like that, which really isn't learning, but they want to get a kaddish for people who are, usually it's for the mornings, they want to say kaddish. So what they'll do is they'll learn one Mishnah. So what that guy, that often... now, unfortunately, we don't have so many of them, but often it was the old European man in the corner was saying, is this last Mishnah right at the end of Maseches Makos, which is a whole Mishnah. He says it in one breath. Rabbi Chananya ben Akasha Omer, Rabbi Chananya ben Akasha taught, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God wanted Lezakos Es Yisrael. What is that? How do you translate that?
To give merit
to the Jews. Lefichach, therefore, here Bolahem Torah Mitzvos, he gave us lots of Torah Mitzvos, which is, by the way, itself a whole shir in and of itself. Some people, unfortunately, they view mitzvahs and Torah as a big burden. But it's not. It's really a merit. It's a great opportunity. And therefore, Hashem, we quote a pasuk, Shene'emar, we quote a verse, Hashem chafetz l'man tzidko, God wants to benefit us. And therefore, yagdol Torah v'yadir, he expands, that should be, you know, a lot of Torah. That's the end of the Mishnah. Then they say, Kaddish. And then they say Kaddish. So the reason they put that there is because they want a nice, friendly Mishnah that everybody should get excited about, everybody should enjoy it, and then it just kind of became like a thing that people mumble, then you get the Kaddish. So that's what it is. But if you look carefully at that Mishnah, you can translate it slightly differently. You could say, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lizakos Es Yisrael. God wanted Lizakos from the word Zach, like Shemen Zayas Zach. He wanted to purify us. Therefore, he gave us a lot of mitzvahs and a lot of learning. He wanted that we should be refined, right? That's the process of refinement, to purify us. Lizakos, Milashon Shemen Zayizach. So when you hear that Mishnah now, you can think of both pshatim. There's the regular pshat, that we love doing mitzvahs, they're not a burden. But the other pshat is that by living a life of Torah and mitzvahs, it's not just bein adam l'makom, it's not just bein adam l'chaver, it's also bein adam l'atzmo, that kind of person. And sometimes in life, we find people who their embodiment of Torah is so true. You're someone like Rav Aryeh Levin, you're like, wow, that person is really a refined person. You know, I want to be around that person. I want to be like that person. Because you see, they've cultivated that kind of personality. So that's, I think, the second reason to learn Pirkei Avos. Because the Rambam says, it teaches us how to be refined. So in the introduction to the Mishnah, in general, the Rambam gives us two reasons. Now turn the page. The Rambam, in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, gives us a third reason. So the Rambam here is explaining again the same story. Why is it that Pirkei Avos is here? So he starts off in line 5. At line 6. Ki afal pi, in line 6 in the middle, on side B. Ki afal pi shehi pshuta v'kala lahavan al fi apshnat. The Rambam says, I'm going to explain to you the Mishnayos and Avos, even though they're simple to understand according to the simple level. Oh, you got the cheap one, sorry. You got the original. No, I got the other side. Thank you. He says, these things, they're pretty simple. Like, having mekabel eskola adam b'sever panim yafos, greet people with a smiling face. That's not so complicated, the Rambam says. Hare, line 7, ein asiyas kol hakolo ba'kal l'kol adam. He says, first of all, it might be easy to learn, but it's not so easy to do. That's a deep teaching. You know, I can learn Pirkei Avos from today till tomorrow, but to actually live that life is not so easy, right? Kasha lichos v'noach lirtos. The Mishnah says, oh, you know what you should do? You should be one of those types of people who everything rolls off their back, and if you ever get annoyed, you get over it very quickly. Well, you know what? Not everybody was endowed by God from birth with an excess of patience. I was on the shallow end of that gift. That just doesn't come so easy. So the Rambam says, first of all, you got to learn Pirkei Avos, and you got to learn it deeply, because even if it sounds simple, it's simple to read, but it's not so easy to do. That's number one. Vegam, line 8, lo kol inyanei muvanim b'li pirush maspik. And not only that, not everything is so easily understood without adequate explanation. V'nosav l'ka. And now this is the interesting line. Shehi mevia lidei shleimus gedola, that learning Pirkei Avos brings to wholeness, it brings to completeness, shleimus ha'adam. And now the next line is the most fascinating one to me, v'osher amiti. What is osher with an aleph? Osher with an ayin is wealth. Osher with an aleph is happiness.
Contentedness.
Exactly, contentedness. So I'm like, that's interesting. How does Pirkei Avos lead to happiness? Well, how do you define happiness? One thing is for sure, the Wall Street Journal has published, happiness is not correlated with money. That we know. That's Torah Yiduim. Once you get back past the basic necessities of life, happiness has nothing to do with wealth. Zero. So what does it have to do? So there is a psychiatrist. He now lives in Teaneck, but he spent decades running a psychiatric facility called Gateways near Pittsburgh. And he also moonlights as a Hasidic Rebbe. Yes, Rabbi Dr. Tversky. So he saw, over his career, about 50,000 patients, he estimates. 50,000 patients. And many of them mamish at the lowest point that a person could ever imagine in their life. Mamish, the worst of the worst. So he has amazing insights on life and basically everything that I've ever read from Rabbi Tversky, and he has over 60 books. Anything I've ever read is amazing. So whatever you can get your hands on, I think it's kedai. So I bought one book that I happen to see one somewhere. It's called Happiness and the Human Spirit. Like, fascinating. Because there are a lot of different perspectives on happiness. There's a lot of research on happiness. A lot of it is now popular because of the influence of positive psychology and a guy in Penn by the name of Martin Seligman. Martin Seligman is basically the father of modern positive psychology. So he talks about what he thinks is the source of happiness. And he begins the illustration with a story. And he's a master of storytelling. So he has a lot of great stories. So he describes how he comes into work one day and he's got his, you know, schedule of patients. And he says, on the day he was talking about a particular patient, we'll call her Nora, he says, on the day he was scheduled to see Nora, he comes into the office that day and he happened to be in a bad mood. So already this is a good mentor for me because I'm not always in the happy mood. It's good to know. Even he gets in a bad mood sometimes. Good. So he says, why is he in a bad mood? He says, I just bought a new car, fully loaded, but the cruise control was not accurate. So he says that the cruise was fluctuating 5 miles an hour from what it should have been on the speedometer. So he was going to have to take it back to the dealer for an adjustment, which would cost him half a day. Fine. Nora walks in for her appointment, for her session, ecstatic and bubbling with happiness. She was 8 months sober and was beginning to reap some of the rewards of sobriety. Her son was going to school all day. She had found a full-time job, albeit at minimum wage, but she had a job, full-time job. And she also found a suitable, inexpensive apartment for herself and for her child. She thought she may even be able to save enough money to get her car fixed. Car trouble. I asked, he says, what's wrong with your car? I asked. There's no reverse, she said. The reverse gear is broken. I asked, how can you drive without a reverse gear? Oh, you have to plan things out, she said. Like how to park so you can get out without backing up. But I must remember that some people don't have a car. He says, if I could have dug a hole, Dr. Tversky says, I would have jumped in. I was irritated, he says, because my cruise control was 5 miles off because, you know, I had to go back to the dealer. Happiness is not having the most but needing the least. And then he goes on to describe, beautiful ending of the story, how then this woman, Nora, had been diagnosed with cancer and was treated with chemotherapy. So then after she had gotten better, she regularly visits her oncologist's office to share her experience and lift up the spirits of the cancer patients. She shows them a picture of her bald head when she was on chemo and says, look, my hair is thicker than ever. So chemotherapy was the greatest thing to happen to my hair. Just recently, he writes, I received a Thanksgiving Day greeting from Nora. That's what she writes. I'm 10 years sober and 7 years cancer free. Life is good. Parentheses, and my car has a reverse gear. Nora is a spiritual person. So Dr. Tversky has a yesod, his perspective on happiness. He says his perspective on happiness is about the human spirit. When a person is in touch with, is calibrated with their human spirit, then they're in a place of happiness. So human spirit, he says, that's a code word for spirituality. For ruchnius. And that's universal. Every person has that. Every person has the source of life that exists within them. And he says this, not me. He says a person can be religious, but not spiritual. Those are not necessarily correlated. He says they can be confused, but they're not. And we can learn a great deal about spirituality from each other out of the context of religion. But the idea of religion, of course, is to bring a person to be a spiritual person. A spiritual person is somebody who's in touch with the life that really animates them, with values, not possessions. And that's the bulk of this volume, which is not very long. It's not a hard read. It's essentially about thinking about what are the spiritual components of being human. What does it mean to have a unique human spirit? So it's the ability to be self-aware, the ability to be humble, the ability to choose, the ability to make the most of circumstances. All the things that are about our neshama, about our spirit, not about our physical existence. So that, perhaps, is a perfect way to understand why Pirkei Avos, according to the Rambam, leads you to Osher HaAmiti. Because a person who is fully in Pirkei Avos, that's the life that they lead, then they are a spiritual person. They're a deeply spiritual person. Dr. Pelkovitz, so most of you know, my Rebbe Movik in psychology, so he wrote together with his father, Rabbi Ralph Pelkovitz. Full disclosure, he's married to Nechama's grandmother, so just so there shouldn't be any conflict of interest here. So the recent book is called Life in the Balance, Torah Perspectives on Positive Psychology. So they talk, their first book was about balanced parenting, and now they're talking about different aspects of positive psychology with a fusion of perspectives from psychology and perspectives from Torah. So Dr. Pelkovitz quotes here a beautiful vort from Rav Palm. He quotes from Rav Palm, from who was a Rosh Yeshiva and Torah Vadas for a long time. So Rav Palm apparently used to say, you know how you can judge whether something is bringing about happiness? It's not how you feel today, it's how you feel tomorrow. It was when he writes that, it was such a powerful thing. And you could think about that. When a person is in touch with something that's spiritual, then that leaves an impact on them. As opposed to if a person is just engaged in something physical. So, you know, the hamburger might taste really good now, but it's not. There's not a lot left tomorrow. And that's true for a lot of physical pleasures. What makes it meaningful, what makes it spiritual, is what's the impact on it? Is it in the context of a relationship? Is it in the context of building something of value and meaning, not just making you feel good for the moment? So happiness is that orientation. He also quotes this var, simcha, which is one of the words in Hebrew for happiness, comes from the word sham moach. It's where your mind is. It's your orientation. It's basically how spiritual you are. So becoming more spiritual is going to lead you to the chayim mu'usharim. But it's also, he alludes in that book to, I think, something that's also unique to Pirkei Avos, which has to do with the fact that Pirkei Avos is so, I don't want to say nitpicky, because that sounds negative, but it is. It's talking about the most minute details of everyday life. So it's regulating everything we do on a regular basis. Like, how often do I meet people? So for me, because in a school setting, I see students all the time. So that means that every time I'm in the hallway, I have to make a decision. I have to make a conscious decision how I want to present myself to that person who's passing me in the hallway. I don't live in a, you know, in an office somewhere in a hall. That means that Pirkei Avos gets down to a lot of details. But I think that actually plays a huge role in why it's related to happiness. Because there is a guy, he's like one of the big experts on happiness. It's a great thing if you can make a living going around the world talking about happiness. It is just, I mean, what could be better than that? His name is Tal Ben Shachar. So Tal Ben Shachar,
he teaches classes.
Right. He taught the most popular course in the history of Harvard University. 1,600 students. 1,600 students signed up. Their parents paid money for them to go to a course on finding happiness.
I'm going to go.
It's good. So he's written a whole bunch of books. His books are very nice, and they're research-based. But Tal Ben Shachar takes the research about happiness, and he puts it into a couple of books, which you can get here in the Skokie Library. I assume you can also get it in the Lincolnwood Library. He has a book called Happiness, Happier. He has a couple of books. So this is one of them, but it's pertinent for this specifically. This is called Choose the Life You Want, 101 Ways to Create Your Own Road to Happiness. Why is this relevant? Because in his Hakdama, his introduction, he says that research in psychology, again, we'll take his word for it, research in psychology illustrates that about 40% of our happiness is determined by the choices that we make. What we choose to do and how we choose to think directly impact the way we feel. So he says, look, the premise of this book is you're going through your average day you have a ton of choices that you're making all the time. And the cumulative effect of those choices is going to be how happy you are or not. So how you choose to face every situation. So he says, you know, from, you know, being passed over for a promotion or some other negative impact, all kinds of scenarios that we find, all the little interactions, how you face those little interactions, that's going to determine a big chunk of how happy you are. Because it's about the perspective, it's about the shamoach, and it goes back to the values. And that's going to inform all. So once you get that, if 40% of our happiness is dependent on choice, then the impact of Pirkei Avos is specifically going to be felt on those micro decisions. Because if we only left the values cultivation part of our personality, the spiritual cultivation, the Pirkei Avos, for the big decisions, so then we could still not find a lot of happiness, because during the day we go about our business and we would not be making happiness-based decisions. We wouldn't be making values-based decisions. So it's not that Pirkei Avos is like the Grinch that stole your day, because every time you greet somebody, you're like, oh my gosh, I got to greet them with a smile again? It's that a person who's really fully integrated Pirkei Avos into their life, now all those little decisions are a happiness-based decision. It's a values-based decision. It's a values-based decision. At the end of the day, when you put your head down on your pillow, you've made a whole sequence of values-based decisions, and you're going to feel really good about your day.
Eventually you do it with no consciousness.
Exactly. That's Rav Elio Dessler. Rav Dessler has a similar point. He calls the Nekuda Sabachira, that at a certain point when you habituate yourself to something, it's not like, whew, I got to psych myself up because I'm going to smile at the next person who walks past me in the hallway. It's, I just always smile at those people in the hallway. That's the kind of person I become. So those decisions are no longer, you know, oh, now I'm forgetting this book. My mother-in-law recommended a book for me years ago. I forget what it was. Maybe it was by Daniel Pink, one of those guys, one of the social psychology guys, who talks about the issue of a person's willpower being worn down when they have to constantly struggle to overcome, you know, they're just emotionally tired out. If every time you see someone, you have to emotionally get yourself revved up to smile, at a certain point it's going to wear you out for the next decision. But if a person lives Pirkei Avos and they're constantly working on themselves so that they're not exhausted mentally and emotionally and spiritually, so then they've grown into that person, that's not a challenge for them anymore. You know, for most of us, thank God, we've been cultivated in terms of our own personality, that when we see something in the store, it's not a moral dilemma whether we should slip it in our pocket or not. And by the way, it sounds like it's humorous, but for some people in certain contexts, that's not the case. For some people, they actually have to think twice before they don't shoplift. And it's crazy to us to think like that, but that's a reality of life. And some people, you know, they have to think twice before they cut you off in, you know, in the right lane. But hopefully over time you cultivate yourself not to do those kinds of things. And that's what Pirkei Avos does. So to summarize, now that we've finished our three reasons, now these are our expansion of what the Rambam was saying, but maybe these are three ways you can appreciate, wow, what a gift Pirkei Avos is. Number one, it gives us the gift of Mesorah for our family, for our Chachamim, for the role of the development of Halacha. It gives us the refinement that we're looking for in terms of becoming the kinds of people that we want to be, and it can lead us really to a life of happiness because it can guide us to being in touch with the human spirit. The refinement correlates directly with the happiness that we can find, and by doing that it can really change our lives in a better way, and we too can go out and publish research on happiness and do amazing things. But hopefully through the course of the summer we can all learn a lot of Pirkei Avos and find some refinement. All right.